Blog Talk Radio.
Well, there's a couple of things going on, one of which is North Korea and its love of nuclear missiles, and also a Georgia election. And I'm going to continue on a little bit with something that we were talking about yesterday, which was the age of no marriage and men going their own way, MGTOW. But here is a little bit from Newt Gingrich on the Korea thing. But here's the thing. You've got a couple of things to bear in mind. Number one, the Hermit Kingdom is highly dependent on China. So China, to a certain extent, will decide what happens in Korea. A second issue is that, you know, this guy could be taken out by China himself. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily just be America's job to go take this person out. Kim Jong-un, the fat little kid, as John McCain calls him. It's a family dynasty. It is a failed country. It's a tyranny, so by definition it's failed. But we've got a very serious situation on our hands. And I think that the main thing to bear in mind is that we can take these people out anytime that we want. One submarine, I'm sure, could decimate the entire country, believe it or not, if we wanted to go in a nuclear direction. But the upshot is that we'd like to solve it without any warfare whatsoever. Here's a little bit from Fox from last night.
Continuing now with our top story, the showdown with North Korea. Yesterday, National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster gave his blunt assessment about the state of the crisis.
This is a problem that has been passed down from multiple administrations. But our president, I think it's really the consensus with the president, our key allies in the region, Japan and South Korea in particular, but also the Chinese leadership, that this problem is coming to a head. And so it's time for us to undertake all actions we can, short of a military option, to try to resolve this peacefully.
Joining us now to analyze from Chicago, Ian Bremmer, president and founder of the Eurasia Group, a leading global political risk research and consulting firm. Ian, you were able to listen to Charles Krauthammer in the previous segment. I wondered if you largely agreed with what he had to say and what you think about President Trump's moves over the past 2 weeks.
Look, I think in terms of what Trump's actually accomplished so far and the intentions to try to make the Chinese pay attention, since they're the ones that have, you know, sort of impact and influence over North Korea to the extent that anyone does, I completely agree with that. But I would say that his suggested outcome, the one peaceful plan, Finlandization, the idea that we're somehow going to turn, or China's going to turn, a country with 10 nuclear weapons into a non-nuclear neutral state, I think is kind of ludicrous on its face. It would be suicidal for Kim Jong-un. So it would require active regime change. And the reason why the Chinese have been so reluctant to actually push the North Koreans is not because they're happy with what North Korea is doing. They're not. They used to be 10 years ago. They're not anymore. The reason they don't push is because they fear that the North Koreans, if they really threaten regime change, that it's going to blow up not only the regime, but also the region. And that's something the Chinese are very loath to move towards.
And there are politics happening in the region as well. And you paid close attention to this. I was interested to read this morning when you said that for a long time, when you go to the capitals there and you're visiting with the people that you are advising, that they didn't really bring up North Korea, but that has changed in the last few weeks. And you say that Japan is a little unhappy. And we know that South Korea has elections coming up on May 9th. So a lot of turmoil there that President Trump is having to deal with.
It is. Let's be clear. This issue is coming to a head. But I mean, if Obama had had a third term or if Hillary Clinton were elected, it wouldn't be coming to a head. So even though the North Koreans continue to develop their nuclear weapons capability, their ICBM capabilities and technology, their cyber capabilities, which they've used to significant effect in the last couple of years, But the administrations haven't said we've got to handle this. Now, Trump comes in and says he does. And the Japanese and the South Koreans last week, everyone I talked to, this was issue number one. And the question was, is Trump really going to engage in military strikes? Because if he does, the countries that are at risk, not the United States, but our allies, South Korea and Japan. So I think what's really interesting here is this is truly Trump's America First policy. It's his most America First policy. It's about the United States. He wants to stop America from potentially being threatened by down the road by North Korea. And if that potentially puts the Japanese and South Koreans at risk, that's less of a concern to him than it would have been other presidents. That's exactly what the Americans voted for with that foreign policy.
All right, here's a little bit from Newt Gingrich on this, and I thought he had some good things to say. At 6:12, and it is the 18th day of April, and we're listening to some saber rattling that's coming out of Asia, but don't forget, you've got a guy, the fat little kid, who not only killed his girlfriend, but her entire backing band. Check this out.
New York Times bestseller Treason, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Let me ask you, Mr. Speaker, the same question I'm asking John Roberts. The comments by Vice President Pence, the era of strategic patience is over. General McMaster saying it's clear the president's determined not to allow this kind of capability to threaten the United States. All right, so we know they have nuclear weapons. We know they don't have ICBM capability. Now, if you take those words literally, it sounds like they feel that they've got to take out any capability they have. How do you interpret it?
Well, I think that's right, because you can have a nuclear weapon delivered by ship. You could do a variety of different things.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be an ICBM. Doesn't have to fit on a missile. You could put it in a cargo container. So I think this is a serious, serious problem. It's also a grave danger of the North Koreans selling nuclear weapons to terrorists. And I think that we've been through a long stretch here. We had a big fight over this when I was Speaker, and you just could not get the Clinton administration to take it seriously. And, of course, Obama took nothing seriously. So we've had a lost period here of almost 30 years, and they've gradually, steadily built up their capability to hurt Seoul, Korea, built up their capability to threaten their neighbors. And I think that it's clear from military leaders that they really do believe that we are very close to crossing a point after which we could lose an American city. And if you're the President of the United States and you're being told by your military leaders that this is so dangerous, you could literally at some point lose the city, I think you have to take very serious steps to stop that from happening.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, let's look at the president's options here for a minute. You're really talking about the possibility that we are going to now engage in a military conflict with North Korea, which we're told Kim Jong-un is mentally unstable. If you look at the neighbors, if he launches a nuclear weapon or conventional weapons for that matter, you're talking about the potential that millions could die in South Korea, millions could die in Japan. And, you know, are we prepared to see that through? Because if we're not, we better not start.
Millions could die in China. I mean, they're right on the border. And so I think that in the very near future, one of three things will happen. I think either he will back down and agree to some kind of suspension of his various programs under enormous pressure from the Chinese, or there will be a military coup and he will be replaced by a more rational leader, or we will begin to take military actions, which could start with things as simple as killing any missile that will be capable of carrying nuclear weapon. It could be steps that are short of starting an all-out war. And the question then is, what does he do? To what degree, and we don't know the answer, to what degree does he want to survive? To what degree does he think that if he's not tough, that he won't survive in his own society because they'll kill him?
Look at his recent behavior. He's killed a brother. He's killed an uncle. He's killed, you know, other detractors.
He killed his girlfriend and her entire band. I mean, This is a guy who
he's unhinged.
Is not nice. Yeah, right. I think it makes it in the immediate future very, very dangerous.
We look,
I think what we've got to consider here is if America is going to take this action, we better be prepared for him if he's as mentally unstable as reports have said that he would go scorched earth. That's a possibility. Now, what do you make of, like, for example, the president did have great meetings with the president of China, and he had planned and campaigned on calling them a currency manipulator, but it seems as a result of those bilateral talks that the president was able to get concessions. Number one, you see troops on the border now that China has sent to North Korea. Number two, they sent coal back to North Korea and imported American coal. Three, we see that they're open to trade concessions to the United States. So it seems like there is a possibility of an emerging new alliance, American and China against North Korea. How much time should we allow for that to play out?
Well, I think it's a matter of weeks or months. It's not a matter of years, but they are taking active measures, and that's a good thing. They've publicly said to the North Koreans, don't test another nuclear weapon. That's a good thing.
And they said that they might take out the sites themselves.
They also were very impressed. Right. And as you remember, they were.
All right. So anyway, big deal. But the question is, what's the chess game look like? Who's got a man up? I mean, if this guy shoots off one nuclear weapon, you have to consider it a complete catastrophe. So we've got to, I mean, really what they should be doing is going in to take him out right now with a SEAL team or whatever you would need, hit him with a bomb from a satellite, whatever you would need to take him out. He's got to be taken out, the leader. 618 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. Just my opinion, of course, but it'll come down to that eventually. We'll either kill a bunch of people in the leader or we'll kill the leader. 805-61802 text. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, thanks for tuning in with me. High spot of my whole day on KOBE.
Thinking about you, girl.
The Hermit Kingdom tried to fire a missile and it blew up, and they think that America may have hacked into the missile, but here it is, reporting from Asia.
It tried to launch a missile on its east coast and failed. This latest provocation comes a day after the Rakusu state paraded their weapons during the grand-scale celebrations of its founder's birthday. Kim Jong-il starts us off with the expected but ill-advised move by the regime, possibly designed to send a message to the unpredictable Donald Trump administration.
According to the U.S. Pacific Command, the missile launched by North Korea from its eastern port city of Gimpo blew up almost immediately. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff also said the missile is believed to have failed, adding that the type of missile was being analyzed. South Korea's foreign ministry strongly condemned the launch.
It's the fifth time this year that North Korea has fired ballistic missiles. This is another clear violation of UN Security Council resolutions. We strongly condemn the launch as a threat to Korea and the international community.
Cho warned that Pyongyang could face serious punitive measures if it continues to conduct nuclear tests and other strategic provocations. The head of South Korea's National Security Office, Kim Kwon-jin, convened a meeting of the National Security Council in which officials decided to respond strongly to additional North Korean provocations. U.S. President Donald Trump has been briefed about...
Well, anyway, they have a problem with their missiles, so... But could you imagine living in South Korea and just waiting for this nutcase to fire off a couple of missiles toward you? I would assume the rate of insurance is going up. All right, here is a little bit about John Ossoff. Now, this guy is a very weird... He's got kind of a strange feel to him. He comes across as very theatrical and very trained, and I see that his he worked for a senator or a congressman, or he worked on Capitol Hill for 5 years. I got to do got to get his bio here, and. Anyway, one of the things that he was educated in was film, so it makes me feel like he is an actor. But he's got a very strange. He seems like a total plant. You know what I mean? Just an absolute far lefty who's been produced in the laboratory to send in to beat Trump. He's got $8 million to do this race in Georgia.
You finally got to is the one that progressives tend to skip, and I think that's the lack of comprehensiveness. Let me ask you about, are you a moderate or a progressive? Which word would you prefer if you had to have one?
Well, I try to shy away from labels, Chris, and focus on the issues. Let me give you a couple examples.
But, no, I understand why you shy away from it, but if you had to choose a label for yourself, which would it be? Give me a label.
Well, I'm pragmatic, and one of the things that would be refreshing about representing this district is that it is a pragmatic, moderate district, and I would be empowered to take courageous stands in the center on, for example, comprehensive immigration reform, where far too many members of Congress who are afraid of primary challenges lack the grit and the guts to do something that's difficult politically. I will do something that's difficult politically and move to the center to try to get big.
This guy is not a centrist, no way. All right, here's a little bit more on this story.
Down, who's on top in the nationally watched race for Georgia's 6th congressional district? There are 18 candidates vying for the one seat. Democrat John Ossoff is in the lead with 45%. Republican Karen Handel is second with 17. Channel 2's Richard Elliott is live in Midtown Atlanta with what experts say the other candidates need to do to try to make this a runoff. Richard?
And remember, this is an open race special election, meaning Republicans and Democrats are in it together. It is not a primary. There are so many candidates that it's virtually impossible for any one of them to win it outright.
We saw long lines at this Sandy Springs polling place as people voted early in the 6th congressional race. The exclusive WSB Landmark Communication poll shows Democrat John Ossoff with 45%, still well below the 50% plus one needed to win outright. Republican Karen Handel, second with 17%. With so much money spent on Ossoff's campaign, GOP strategist Brian Robinson believes the Democrats should be further ahead.
The bad news for him is that he had $8 million. I mean, no one in his race has come anywhere near to the resources that he has, and he only has 45%.
Republicans Bob Gray, third at 8.6%, Dan Moody, fourth at 8.4%, and Judson Hill, fifth with 8%. With 7% undecided and a 4% margin of error, Democratic strategist Theron Johnson believes there's still a chance someone can catch Handel.
Karen Handel's got to figure out a way, because she's one of the most seasoned politicians in the race, has run statewide before and pretty much well known. But now's an opportunity for one of those Republicans who are in third and fourth and fifth place to maybe make a run at the end to try to get a second.
Anyway, so this guy is a handpicked stooge. She's going to come in. All of his money comes from outside of Georgia.
You did have a little trouble with Glenn Kessler in the Washington Post today, saying that one of your ads is misleading and that you talk about a top secret security clearance. You were congressional aide for 5 years. Are you trying to exaggerate your national security credentials?
No, I mean, politics is a contact sport, and I expect to take some hits.
Listen to how this guy answers questions. He never answers the question directly unless he feels like it's to his benefit. He sounds like somebody from Hollywood who has got a script in his hand or has memorized a script.
Live in your congressional district, and the enormous $8.3 million you raised in the first quarter has come largely from out-of-state donors. So is it effective for Republicans to paint you as someone who will be more beholden to national Democrats than your constituents?
Well, I grew up in this district. I grew up in this community. I've never seen political excitement at the local level like we're seeing right now. More than 10,000 Georgians have made contributions to the campaign. As I mentioned, there are thousands of volunteers, many of whom are getting involved for the first time. So I'm optimistic.
But there are still more from outside the state than inside the state, and many of them are famous. I'm looking at a list: Connie Britton, Judy Collins, Chelsea Handler, John Leguizamo, Rosie O'Donnell. They want to paint you as Coast, West Coast, liberal people supporting you, having nothing to do with where you live, where you came from. You don't think that's a problem for you?
Well, the average contribution to the campaign is $42. Nearly 200,000 people have made contributions. And
more of them from out of state than in state.
I keep returning to the very basic political fact. Democrats are going to lose in Georgia tomorrow. They built up expectations, and John Ossoff isn't going to get a majority. They lost in Kansas last week. In fact, their turnout went from 80,000 voters in November to 55,000 voters last week. All of this talking up of issues that don't resonate with people in the blue wall states that turned red is just Democrats repeating the same mistake that they made in the fall, underestimating Donald Trump's appeal to people who feel left behind and talking about issues of great interest to Manhattan Beltway media elites, but which do not resonate with working-class Americans.
Fake news. This guy is more fake news. They're building him up. They're trying to destroy Trump. Anything to destroy Trump. Anything to destroy the Republican Party. Take a break here, and we'll have some local news for you. 523-1450, 805-6180. That's your text line. Kelly O'Connell on KOBE.
Being here with you, being there with you, can't explain myself.
Okay, so I've got a little story here on Lois Lerner, the lady who was famous for going after the Tea Party, and some folks are calling for her prosecution. Peter Roskam, Representative Republican Illinois,
Lois Lerner. I believe you want to take a fresh look at Lois Lerner. Is that correct?
That's correct. Look, the Obama administration was very dismissive about the crimes that we believe Lois Lerner committed. And those are strong words that I'm using, but the House Ways and Means Committee voted out a criminal referral to the Department of Justice, which was completely dismissed by the Department of Justice. President Obama was on television at one point in the midst of the investigation, Stuart, and he said, there's not a smidgen of wrongdoing here. So look, we think that Lois Lerner did particularly two things wrong. Number one, that she denied people due process and equal protection of the law based on their political philosophy. We're convinced that there's overwhelming evidence to suggest that that's true, and that's a felony. Secondly, we believe that she lied to the Inspector General of the Treasury Department when they were investigating that very thing. What we want is a new Justice Department to take a fresh look at this while we're well within the statute of limitations, and if they can, to move forward with the prosecution.
Pete Roskam, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it. Thanks very much, sir.
Thank you, Stuart.
All right, now what's going on with immigration? I've got a couple of stories here for you, one of which is from Yahoo News, and this is on the 16th, so this is 2 days ago. The border wall that President Donald Trump is planning and starting to build could seal some Americans on the Mexican side, technically on U.S. soil, but outside of a barrier built north of the river separating the two countries. Rio Grande landowners could lose property as well, and those who already lost some for the existing fence are getting ready for a new battle. And the Texas Civil Rights Project has begun signing up landowners and identifying people who might be affected. So here is a little bit more. Haitians have found out that they're going to get stopped coming into the country or sent back after Obama had a 6-year humanitarian Haitian policy. And so 97% of Haitians who were planning, this is by their calculation, 97% of Haitians who were planning to come here have changed their mind, and they were coming here. Haiti is obviously in the Caribbean, is one of the poorest, probably the worst run country and the poorest country in this hemisphere. And they have, I believe, 8 million people or 6 million people there. And you know how many water purification plants they have? Zero. So that's the kind of a country it is. So 97% of these people have decided to not try to make it across the border or try to come here. And in living in South Florida, like I did, it was very typical for stories of boats of Haitians coming in, and especially Haitians drowning, as they have these very poorly designed boats that come apart in the water, and then a bunch of people wash up on the shore. So very terrible stories that you hear. And so the number of inadmissible migrants showing up at U.S. ports of entry and demanding, this is from the Washington Times, and demanding to be let in has dropped from more than 20,000 in October to about 4,400 in March, nearly 80% down. The number of illegal immigrants nabbed while trying to cross the U.S. border between ports is down from more than 46,000 in October to 12,000 last month. So there's obviously a huge impact, the Trump effect. And all right, so here's a little bit from Jeff Sessions on going after sanctuary cities, which is obviously something that's a big deal here because we are a sanctuary city, a sanctuary county, a sanctuary state, whatever.
Meantime, tonight, I sat down with these.
However you want to explain it. Here's Jeff Sessions, the head of the Justice Department. And this is from yesterday.
Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, inside the Department of Justice. First up, immigration, sanctuary cities, and his recent trip to the border. General, thank you so much for allowing us here. By going to the border this week, you sent a message to a lot of people, and that message was loud and clear. The border is not open to anyone who just thinks they can cross it. And you, in addition to the message, you provided a mechanism with 125 new immigration judges, with a policy that's being sent to the United States Attorney, that when we've got gang members who are coming in for a second time, their cases are going to be prioritized. Border Patrol agents are going to be all the things that were ignored for the past 8 years. Is it going to make a difference?
It's going to make a difference. And the biggest difference is the message Donald Trump's election sent and his leadership, which is this border is not open. If you come to America, come lawfully, don't come unlawfully. And that's already, I think, a huge factor in the decline in the attempts to enter America. So we're on this virtuous cycle where you have a decline in attempts to enter America. We had March was the lowest month in 17 years.
Right.
And it was 72% below President Obama's last month in office. This is a really a remarkable alteration.
When President Obama in the summer, I believe, of 2014, and he said there was so much poverty in Central America, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, there was a lot of talk by Border Patrol agents that a lot of gang members, MS-13 from El Salvador, were coming into the country. Border Patrol agents and sources were telling me that a lot of them were saying, yeah, I'm a gang member. What are you going to do about it? You have to let me in. With the influx of all of them, they're here. So even if we do close that border, and I believe that the message is there, the mechanism is in place, you put it in place. Now, what do we do with the ones who were here? How do we find them? How do we identify them? And how do we move them out?
We're going to go after them. We can defeat those gangs. In 2006 and 2007, MS-13 was severely damaged. Its murders and crimes were way down, but they've come back over the last decade, and we can do it again. We are going to do it again. They need to know right now we're coming after you and other gangs too. But the MS-13 is a particularly violent gang group, and it does need to be stopped, and we can do it. And then we're going to deport them after they've been convicted and served their time, and it's not going to be so easy to get back in the country.
Well, let me ask you this. You and I both understand what it takes to get initiated in this MS-13 gang. It's Murder Incorporated. I mean, that's what they do. If we have someone who has entered illegally and is simply a gang member, but a gang member of MS-13, is that grounds to prioritize their case and remove them?
Yes. No person can come into the country illegally and not expect to be deported. I mean, where did this come from? So somebody gets past the border, they spend a week in the United States somewhere, and then they're caught. They get the claim they don't have to be deported, don't deport me. Mm-hmm. That makes no sense at all. So we need to restore lawfulness. We need to tell the people, don't come illegally. If you want to come, wait your time. And when people start doing that, we'll see a great improvement. And if somebody commits a crime while they're here legally or illegally before permanent residence, then they can and should be deported.
I'm optimistic, like you. I believe that the message is clear, mechanisms are in place, but there's so much to do. We need more judges. We need more courts, too.
We are doing, you know, what I've done is I've examined the hiring process. It takes way too long when we're going to cut that way down. So we'll have 75 new judges next year. We'll add 50 new ones within the next few weeks. Actually, mm-hmm. We'll have 50 more at the border, and this will help us a lot.
Just this week, Fox News, Tucker Carlson, started a whole movement. He had a mayor on and who indicated that he was proud of his sanctuary city, Lansing, Michigan. It turns out that after a lot of discussion and after a lot of people watched, they called a meeting, and it turns out that Lansing is not now going to be a sanctuary city. What are we going to do about those sanctuary cities besides not giving them grant money?
First and foremost, they need to listen to their constituents. I do not believe the people of Lansing, Michigan wanted an individual who came to the country illegally who got convicted of an assault or crime or murder or rape or drug deal and is under the U.S. law is shall be removed from America.
Right.
Why would any city want to say, no, you can't remove these people? They get to stay in our community. It makes no sense. So first, the voters of these cities need to hold their city councils and mayors to account. The police, a police works for the mayor. Sometimes they'll support the mayor. But I've talked to police officers. They think this is crazy.
We both have, but they work for the mayor. They, some of them are appointed by the mayors. There's got to be a mechanism that the federal government has so that the local police can actually identify when an MS-13 gang member is getting out of jail for a crime that some mayor doesn't think is important enough to notify ICE.
Well, General Kelly, you know, the Secretary of Homeland Security, he's doing a great job. Our ICE officers are doing a great job.
They are.
And they just need a heads up. That's just what you say. That's all they need. The detainer is that mechanism. You know, from a prosecutor as a, in New York, one jurisdiction honors the next door jurisdiction. So you finish your sentence of the bad guy, mm-hmm. and if they've got a case they want to hold them on, mm-hmm. you hold them and turn them over to them. Mm-hmm. That's what the detainer allows to happen. And what we're doing now is irrational. It makes no sense. It undermines the relationship with the United States government. Mm-hmm. And I think these cities need to be held to account.
They want to be humane about this. As President Obama said, this is not who we are.
It is a remarkable thought, really. People come to America by permission. They get a visa. It says I can come here for a time, or they break in the border illegally. But they're here at our sufferance. And if they commit a crime here, mm-hmm. the law says they shall be deported, not maybe.
Exactly.
Shall be deported.
Okay.
And I don't understand this. We've got to keep the pressure up. We're going to look at these grant programs. If you're not cooperating with the federal government, you're going to lose grant money. We're going to battle on them every step of the way. We're going to put pressure on these cities. And it's just important for America and the people in these cities
to understand how dangerous it is for them.
Sting has a lot of impact on us in this area. 523-1450 to call in 805-6180-2 text. And we'll take a little break here for your weather. All right, so here is a little bit from what was just mentioned, which was this interview with this mayor, just a little bit of it, in Lansing, who I guess surprised everybody to say that you're living in a sanctuary city.
Certain federal funds to places that refuse to cooperate with ICE in enforcing this country's immigration laws, but at least one city is doing it anyway, actually a bunch are. Despite the Trump administration's warnings, Lansing, Michigan, the city council there, just voted to make itself, in effect, a sanctuary city. Virgil Bernero is the mayor of Lansing, and he joins us now. Mr. Mayor, thanks a lot for coming on.
Absolutely, Tucker. I've seen your show. I know you're fair.
Well, I try to be fair, and I also try to get to what the principle is underneath the policy. And I just want to know when it's okay for cities to ignore federal law, just kind of going forward.
Well, probably never. I think we have a federal system, though, as you know. You're a pretty smart guy. I was hoping we're going to be able to have a smart discussion. I passed an executive order, I'm sure you have a copy of it, that we think comports with federal law. My city attorney looked at it. I discussed it at length with my chief of police. And it basically put in writing what was already our modus operandi. It was what we were doing, but we didn't have a written policy. I thought it was important at this time to put it in writing so that there was no confusion with our officers or our citizens. We think it comports with federal law. As you know, we have a federal system. And for your viewers, you know, they should understand that sometimes you got to go back and look this stuff up. And I do, too, because we have federal, state and local, and we have responsibilities. And my primary responsibility, my number one job, Tucker, is to keep people safe. I take it very seriously.
Uh-huh.
For 12 years, I've been mayor, and public safety is job one. After that, economic development. So if Donald Trump or Jeff Sessions think that they can increase safety in my community, I'd like to know about it. I'd be happy to have a discussion with them about it. But we are not ready to federalize our local Lansing Police Department.
Well, we don't have that. They're not asking you, I don't think, to federalize, but not to subvert federal law. And I don't think that legally it's your prerogative to do that. And again, I've asked other mayors the same question. I'd love to hear your response. If your position suddenly became that we're not going to enforce the federal laws on tax evasion, child pornography, or gun possession, people look at you and say, you don't get to do that because you don't write the federal laws. You're subject to them. And you would say, what? I don't feel like it. What would be your response?
I'd say this, Tucker, and again, this is great. Let's have a reasoned discussion. Let's bring in FBI, state, federal. We have a great relationship with federal authorities, FBI, ATF, and yes, ICE.
Now, here is, not to interrupt, but here is the day after this thing. Well, let's see. No, well, it's 12 days later. Let's see what the people said.
We interviewed the mayor of Lansing, Michigan, Virgil Bernero, regarding his city making itself a sanctuary city. After 168 hours as a sanctuary city, Lansing City Council called a special meeting happening right now to reconsider this, perhaps because they recognize it could cost them a lot of federal money. Mayor Bernero was just at that meeting, which is still going on, and he joins us now. Mr. Mayor, thanks a lot for coming on. So last time we talked, you explained that you were going to make Lansing basically heaven on earth. I'm maybe overstating a little bit, but just like a great American city by letting a lot more people come there illegally and work for really low wages. It seems like your city council didn't agree. Why didn't they see the brilliance of your plan?
Oh, no, come on now, Tucker. I said nothing like that. I think we're a great city now. But I must say, I heard from a lot of your fans after I came on, and you do have a great fan base. I think it's wonderful. Look, what we're seeing is democracy in action, Tucker, and this discussion is part of it. I think we should have more conversations where we shed light and not heat, and I appreciate that. That's one thing I appreciate about your show is that people get a chance to talk. You talk about real issues, and council is having a real debate. You know, council heard from the Chamber of Commerce. I work with the Chamber of Commerce on growing business all the time in Lansing, and they're hearing from the people on both sides of the issue. I mean, they
– There you go. Secret sanctuary status that the mayor never put into law. He decided to put it into law and people blew up. 6:54, Kelly O'Connell will be right back. 523-1450. Time for Gaffigan.
There is always that travel pressure, you know, the eating travel pressure. You know, it's like, oh, you're going to Austin, you got to get barbecue. Got to get barbecue in Austin. Every city, you know, has a food they're famous for. It's almost like there was a meeting.
Okay, Chicago, what do you pick? Deep dish pizza. Okay, Philadelphia cheesesteak. Okay, Boston, beans. You want beans?
Yeah, beans are awesome. They're wicked awesome. The Yankees Dunkin' Donuts.
New England loves their Dunkin' Donuts. Some people love Dunkin' Donuts too much.
Dunkin' Donuts is awesome.
I think they're just making donuts, not curing lupus. I like Dunkin' Donuts, but have you been to a Dunkin' Donuts that doesn't have a homeless guy standing in front? Is that part of the design plan? There'll be an entrance here, a deranged lunatic here. There's always a guy standing out there like Mayor Ronald McDonald. Dunkin' Donuts. It's an interesting concept, really. It's almost as if AA opened their own restaurant. What should we have? Coffee? Donuts? Maybe a little honesty. Hi, my name's Jim. I haven't had a donut in 30 seconds. I don't know how Dunkin' Donuts even stays in business. They sell 3,000 donuts. What do they make, $30? Whenever I go in there, it seems like they're trying to get rid of the donuts. Like, yeah, I'll have six donuts. That'll be $3, but if you get a dozen, it's a nickel. How much are two dozen? We give you $10. They're either trying to get rid of them or trying to get us addicted. You ever buy a couple of donuts, you open it up, and there's some free munchkins in there? Those are the gateway donuts. First time's always free.
All right, we'll take a break on the hour and be back. And I got some great stuff. Cucks, and marriage and stuff like that. Liberalism. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 659. Okay, so for your headlines, and this is from Drudge, calling for elections in the UK, looking for the Facebook killer, incredible, horrible crimes being streamed on a regular basis now. North Korea promising a missile launch every week, and the United States doesn't believe that. Sending more aircraft carriers, though. And Trump still trying to decide if he's in or out of the climate accord, which is not a good sign, in my opinion. Egyptian archaeologists discover six mummies in a 3,500-year-old tomb. And as I mentioned before, fighting for Georgia, which is it's a proxy battle against the administration. And this guy gets up and he's asked, are you a progressive? Are you a moderate? He says, I don't go after labels. I don't accept. Like he flew here from heaven to help out the world, help out Americans, right? He doesn't understand anything about our process. Right, which is the immediate sign of a just complete liar. We've got a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Is this Bob?
Yes, sir. Kelly, how'd you know? Was it the ring?
Bob. I have to do my Bob Foghorn. Bob, what's going on?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for the kudos last Friday. And it really meant a lot to me, especially when you said that I may have a positive effect on our good mayor, Mr. Ken Magashima.
Is he coming out of his shell a little bit?
Oh, he's already gone. I mean, he's way past that. The minute he said that he was going to start listening to Dave Ramsey, that's it. He's gone. Him and his beautiful wife. He's going to take a vacation, though. But what I wanted to bring up is that you talk a lot of national politics and that kind of stuff, and I came back down to Mr. Juan Vasquez here in the county commissioners.
Local politics. Who is Juan Vasquez? You bring his name up almost every time.
You haven't met him?
You're disgruntled with. Hold on a second there. Let me just finish my statement for once. You're disgruntled with Juan Vasquez.
Slightly, you know, because he cost me money.
Does he come from a good family? Because that's usually your setup for going after somebody.
I don't know him that well. I'm sure he does. He never would have been elected if he didn't come from a good family. But he doesn't. He's got a rotten attitude, you know. And
rotten?
Rotten.
Describe rotten. Details. What is rotten about his attitude?
Okay, to make a long story short, the only way I know how to answer that is I get the impression that he is from the old, old school. I'm from the old school, and the millennials are from the school. That's how I see it. And I don't like people, just because they're vice chair on our commissioner, on the board of commissioners, that he should be bad-mouthing other people. He should be higher than that. You know, if he wants to take action, you take action. But he don't go cussing about another person. Off the bench.
I'm going to interpret what you're saying here. Even a bathroom has a second seat. That's no reason to pick on people.
Well, yeah, you know, that reminds me.
Public bathroom.
When I was here, I'll make this quick. I got tired of the graffiti going on at the Department of Labor. Couldn't help myself. I just put kill the graffiti artist. And, oh, did that raise some eyebrows? I can't believe it. But anyway, they've taken care of it. I've made my donation, and everything's on the good and go. But I would like to see them clean up those holding tanks at the old Las Cruces High School District Court. And because that's not coming from the inmates, that's coming from the Sheriff's Department.
The outmates.
So that's all, right. I have to say for today.
All right, okay. All right, but what was your point in today's call that Juan Vasquez has got a rotten attitude?
Yeah, well, I don't know the guy. I haven't met him. I feel like I got to buy him some Don Juan coffee or whatever that Don's name is.
All right, hey, I got another call. Thanks for the call, Bob. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Jeffrey. How are you doing this morning?
Good, Jeffrey. What's going on? It's been a little while. I hope you're well.
I have been. I am well. I just, so this is twice now that I've listened to, I guess his name is Bob.
Yes.
And he makes me laugh. That's all I can say. You know, but he made a statement that he's from old school. And, you know.
What does that mean?
I say he's not from old school. I think he's more millennial than what he likes to think he is. Because one of the things that old school let me show you my education, does is they speak in general terms without specifics and try to make it sound like it's all. And that's what I've heard the last 2 days from him. Not to really.
Oh, that's all right.
Bob, I've listened to him a couple times.
Jeffrey, you have every right to comment on Bob, just like Bob has every right to comment on somebody else, even Juan Vasquez. Heaven forbid. I have heard a few complaints about Juan Vasquez, but all right. So how do you rate the millennials as a generation? By the way,
I think that everybody is all separated now. We have everybody in their little bitty compartments, which is, you know, we are a patchwork in the United States. We're not a melting pot. We're a patchwork. But everybody thinks that they have their own right, and I don't really see that. The only right we have is to work.
So
provide and do the best we can for our family.
Jeffrey, the millennials, therefore, the generation of socialism, is that what I'm hearing?
I think they have an idea of socialism, but they really don't know what socialism is.
Correct.
And what it actually stands for. It has nothing to do with making them better. Socialism has nothing to do with making people better. Socialism is all about bringing people down to one level.
Look at Venezuela. They had the greatest concentration of oil wealth in the world, and it within a couple of decades they're living like animals over there. As a matter of fact, to get food they have to steal it, to get medical care they have to leave the country. If they want meat on the table, they have to break into a zoo and kill an animal in a cage. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. That is a prime example of what socialism ends up being.
Yeah.
So, you know, I never really understood why history was important when I was in school. And over the last 10 years, I have realized how important history is to be taught and to be taught correctly so that history always repeats itself because we don't really think it's important.
Yep.
But if we can learn from others' mistakes, then we could actually break the cycle.
Well,
instead,
we got to take a break here, but it seems to me that what we're talking about is the fact that, and I was thinking about this getting ready for the show today. There was a guy that came along, and his name was John Dewey, and he brought a lot of ideas of change into the school systems in America. And we used to have a classical education, and now we don't. And so people don't learn a lot about history. And the way that history is taught, it's very superficial. It's a lot of times with an attitude. And we have a great history. The West has the greatest history in mankind's entire tenure. So we should be proud of it. And to teach history in specifically in detail makes it interesting. But the way it's taught to most people is boring. But it gives the left a leg up, have control of the education system, make sure that we don't know history, and therefore we can be turned into propaganda robots.
Right. And when one of the things that I have seen and heard is that history is, they're embarrassed about history because of the fact of history. Because we, I mean, we as Americans, when we started founding America, we did some really horrible, nasty things. No different than has any other country throughout history. But we constantly feel like, you know, it's a disgrace that we have to try to cover it up or rewrite it.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Jeffrey, I got to go. Thanks for the call. Great call. And Bob, you got people listening to you. You got, I wouldn't go so far as to say fans, but Bob, I do think it's important spending time with a mayor who strikes me as a little bit of an introvert in trying to humanize him and make him become in touch with society, such as Dave Ramsey, such as my show. I know that he doesn't, you know, he won't admit that he listens, but he clearly does. He clearly listens and may not like what he hears. But we've got a prophecy from Bob, who I know is religious, that the mayor is going to be the governor of the state. Do you agree with that? 523-1450. Don't have my text line, but is the mayor going to bring his unusual brand of leadership and revolutionize the state? Is the mayor going to get up and run for governor? Do you think that the mayor would have the cojones to stand up and say, we are a no growth state and that's what I'm running on? Just curious. He did it in Doñana. He did it in Las Cruces. Will he do it when he tries to take over the state and turn it into a no growth, turn it into a zombie state? 718 Kelly O'Connell and Las Cruces AM 1450, 523-1450. Be right back. Please feel free to call in Mayor Ken. 718. It's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, Michael Swickard.
Michael, what's going on, man?
Well, my column last week was what it means to be an American.
Did you want to talk about that on the next segment?
After your commercials are over, I'm ready.
All right, man. Can I put you on hold?
Please do.
Thank you. It's 7:21. It's 7:21, and we've got a call from Michael Swickard, who wants to summarize his article, What It Means to Be an American. You can find it at NewMexicoPolitics.net, What It Means to Be an American. Michael, thanks for the call, and fill us in.
Well, Dennis Prager is a talker, and he was asked, what's the biggest danger to our country? And he said, it's that we're not teaching our next generation what it means to be an American. And so I have these three presumptions, Kelly, that are truly American: the presumption of innocence, the presumption of commerce, and the presumption of liberty. And, you know, we no longer have the presumption of innocence when someone is arrested, do we?
Yeah, well, a lot of times we don't anymore, do we? So how do we? Michael, let me ask you
not
one.
With the media.
Let me ask you one thing. What do you think an average person can do to fight back on something like the presumption of innocence? I'm an attorney asking a non-attorney, but from just a practical point of view, what are your thoughts?
What I do is I yell at those reporters every time saying, why are you trying the case on the front page of the newspaper?
Fair enough.
But and the problem is we have to have the presumption of innocence even when we have the suspicion of guilty. We must have the presumption and give the full weight of innocence first if we want to have a free country.